Welcome back to the GCN Racing News Show. Coming up this week, Tadej Pogačar says he's better than ever, and his performance at the Tour de Suisse last week means we have no reason to doubt him. I'll be looking at what it means for the upcoming Tour de France. I'll also be letting you know why Mathieu van der Poel brought the sport into disrepute and wrapping up one of the busiest weeks of racing I can ever remember. It's been nigh on impossible to keep up. I'll do my best. Let's get going. This week in the world of racing, we learnt that Wout van Aert will not be racing this year's Tour de France, which is a huge blow for him, for the race, and most of all for the fans. Van Aert withdrew from the Dauphiné after his stage win there just over a week ago due to an infection in his elbow from a crash he'd had in training before the race. He and the team concluded together that he wasn't going to have enough time to be in good form for the Tour. We also learnt that Mathieu van der Poel displayed unseemly and inappropriate behaviour and damaged the image of the sport at the Tour de Suisse last week. He had the audacity to sit in the hot seat after his time trial without a top on, in 40 degree heat. He received a 500 Swiss franc fine, but probably a lot of new fans. And I was actually going to present the show topless this week, but I can't afford the fine and I don't want to read the comments. Finally, we learned that Tadej Pogačar hasn't gotten any worse. After a near-perfect Spring Classics campaign followed by his first win at the Tour de Romandie, he's recently been at altitude in Sierra Nevada, returning to competition at the Tour de Suisse last Wednesday. And if there were any doubts that he'd be in shape, which there probably weren't, he quashed them pretty quickly, didn't he? He went with over 70 kilometres remaining on the opening stage of the race, crushing any hope that anyone else might have had of beating him. His nearest challenger that day was Richard Carapaz of EF, over 2 minutes down, whilst the group fighting it out for fourth place was at over 4 minutes. It was a reminder, not that we needed it, that Pogačar is still the boss. He's not slowing down and he is not losing motivation. He was beaten on two of the five stages though. The second stage was won by Romain Grégoire of Groupama from the early breakaway. They weren't quite caught by Pogačar and Vatsek by the line. He also didn't win stage three, although his teammate did. In fact, such was the dominance of Pogačar on that opening stage, UAE could afford to give freedom to the rest of the team to take their own opportunities, which Jonathan Narváez took full advantage of there. He beat Murisa to the line, whilst Magnus Cort won the bunch sprint just behind them. Pogačar could only finish 12th that day, by far his worst result of 2026, so he must have been gutted. Mathieu van der Poel finished 5th that day, but came extremely close to a stage win the following day in the individual time trial, not normally his speciality. But he set an early benchmark, and as more and more riders came across the line, the stronger that benchmark looked. In the end, only Pogačar himself could unseat him from his throne, but by the narrowest of margins. The timing screens for a third of a second, but the official results list him as just 0.03 seconds behind Pogačar. Now, it wasn't as close on the fifth and final stage, but Pogačar did have his work cut out to take the win there. Lenny Martinez of Bahrain Victoria had attacked his breakaway companions on the climb to the finish, but with Pogačar bearing down on him, it was always going to be a tough ask to stay away and take the win. Pogačar caught and passed the Frenchman with just a few hundred metres to go, taking his third stage win and, of course, wrapping up the GC. So another box ticked for him. Carapaz held on for second on GC, albeit 6.5 minutes down, making it the biggest winning margin at the race in decades, despite being five stages instead of eight. Standout ride on the GC, though, was Matthias Vatsek of Lidl Trek, who took third after a very strong and very consistent 5 days. So this is what Pogačar's season has looked like so far. 16 race days, 13 wins, including two general classifications. He's also won 2 points jerseys and only finished outside the top eight once, that being on stage three in Switzerland last week. Now, he's been at this level for quite some time, but I still look at his results in astonishment that it's possible to be that good that consistently in modern cycling. His wins in Switzerland also mean he's just the third rider in history to have won a stage in pro cycling's 10 biggest stage races. Both he and Jonas have won 8 of them overall. Pogačar still misses the Vuelta and the Basque Country, whilst Jonas is missing the races Poggi has won this year, Romandie and Swiss. Now, with the Tour de France fast approaching, lots of people are doing their best to make comparisons of climbing power to weight ratio of different durations between the big favourites, primarily Poggi and Jonas, of course, but it's very difficult to make comparisons, in my humble opinion. Situations and race scenarios are completely different, as are weather conditions, cumulative fatigue levels, etc., etc. Nevertheless, estimates of Pogacar's power on that final climb yesterday ranged from 6.9 to 7.2 watts per kilo for 24 minutes. Some are saying that Vingegaard's best climbing at the Giro in May was just as good, but it doesn't really tell us anything we didn't already know. They will both be good at the Tour de France, the competition will bring out the best in both of them, and Pogacar is the man to beat. Beyond his results last week, though, Pogacar gave an ominous interview to L'Équipe in which he said that last year he'd done a climbing test at the team's training camp in Sierra Nevada, and it went so well, he thought he would never ever go faster. But this year, for fun, he tried it again, and he did go faster. Anyway, the first mountain stage of the Tour this year comes on stage 3, and they scale the Tourmalet 3 days later during what is a very hard opening week to the race. So we're going to find out pretty quickly how they compare in what will be the first race they've done together this season. I will also have our big GCN Tour de France preview out for you soon, in which we'll go through every single stage in detail and look at all the big riders taking part, so stay tuned for that. And whilst I'm on the subject of the biggest bike race on the entire planet, you may have noticed I'm sporting a special t-shirt today, a design that has been available in the past but is available again for purchase in our online store, shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com. So we had a couple of comments about this particular one from you, including this one from John, so we thought we'd bring it back in a limited run. It's also in our store where you'll see that we've added a new print to our collection, one that I have in fact just down here. Just like the Spring Classics prints, this one comes in the A4 size that you see here and also the bigger A3 size. And if you do buy it, it'll come framed just like this. A reminder that our sale of merchandise plays a huge part in funding all our free-to-view content here at GCN. You can also support us with a super thanks on YouTube or simply by getting involved in the comments and pressing the like button. It really does all help, so thank you very much indeed. Okay, I shall move on now to the Women's Tour de Suisse, which had suspense to the very last. There were already some pretty large gaps on GC after the opening stage, which was won by Femke de Vries of Visma, who outsprinted FDJ's Lauren Dixon to the line to take her first ever pro win. Italian champion Elisa Longo Borghini took the leader's jersey straight off de Vries the following day into Locarno, though. She attacked the group with just under 10Ks remaining, crossing the line half a minute clear of everybody else. However, that gap would not have been that big were it not for Marlon Reusser and Kasia Nujvidoma taking a wrong turning. The only sprint stage came on day 3, but it was less of a sprint from Zoe Bagstedt and more of an attack, in my book at least. That's how it looked. She kicked so hard with a few hundred metres to go, she just gapped everybody else in the field and they couldn't get close to bringing her back before the finish. It was an impressively dominant win, I've got to say. And actually, she came close to backing that up the following day in the individual time trial, where she finished a close second to world champion Marlon Reusser. Those two were separated by 11 seconds, but there was a huge gap to the rest, with Los Adiges in third at 54 seconds. And it was enough to put Reusser into the lead of her home stage race, but with just 10 seconds in hand over Longo Borghini, many of us were expecting fireworks on that fifth and final stage. Which we did get, just not from Longo Borghini. She finished 16th on the stage, but close to 10 minutes down on the winner, which is Marlon Reusser. She'd gone clear of Cabal and Nujvidoma on the final kilometre of the stage, which obviously meant she took home the overall honours as well. Cabal had done enough on that final stage to move up one place to second on GC, with Nujvidoma in third. The race was also marred by a couple of significant crashes. Erska Ziegart fell hard, fracturing her jaw on stage 2, whilst Lauren Dixon managed to finish stage 3 with a broken collarbone. She was forced to abandon, of course, before the time trial, while sitting in second place overall. So that must have hurt both physically and emotionally. Fair play though to the Tour de Suisse organisers. There's been a lot of talk in recent years about changing pro cycling to make it more modern and more audience friendly, but they've actually gone and done it. It's the first ever World Tour level stage race to have men's and women's races running concurrently with the same start and finish towns, which meant that roadside fans got to see loads of action, particularly as some of the stages were on circuits ridden multiple times. Now, the organisers say they've been struggling a little bit with budget, so here's hoping that the changes they've made to the format help the races continue. Okay, lots more racing to get through, so I'm going to skim through the headlines now. Jasper Philipsen of Alpecin Premier Tech won the general classification at the Tour of Belgium, but it really came down to the wire. UAE's Runa Heregots was caught within sight of the line on stage 1, but coming through the melee to take the win there was Biniam Gamay of NSN. He just pipped Tim Melier to the line. Melier bounced back the following day to win for the third time in his career at Knokke Heist, that time beating Coy and Philipsen, and it felt like the stages were almost being shared out amongst the world's top sprinters. Now, Alex Aramburu of Cofidis was the only non-sprinter to win a stage. He did that on the hardest day of the race on stage three, being the fastest from a small group that contested the finish and going into the leader's jersey with that win. However, without a time trial this year, the GC really would come down to the bonus seconds. Coy beat Mallier and Philipson on stage four in a photo finish, which you'd hope was enough to get him at the start at the Tour de France for his team Decathlon. But in coming third, Philipson moved himself to within 2 seconds of Aramburu with one stage remaining. Philipson took 4 bonus seconds in the Golden Kilometre on that final stage, moving himself temporarily into the virtual race lead. But Aramburu fought back, taking 3 himself and going back into the lead by a single second. However, he could do nothing against Philipson in the finale. The Belgian won the stage ahead of Yenne Boekmoes of Lotto Antimarché, who himself also leapfrogged Aramburu in GC and into second overall. Okay, moving on to the Tour of Slovenia now, and I have a hunch Florian Lipovic must have watched last week's GCN Racing News show, because in it, I say he's an incredibly consistent, powerful rider without being a prolific winner. Well, when I said that, he'd amassed a grand total of 3 pro wins, but he doubled that in the last 2 days. He crossed the line with teammate Giulio Pellizzari on the Queen stage on Saturday there, and they had a huge gap on the rest of the field. He then backed that up by attacking in the finale of what was quite a punchy final day yesterday, and despite a pretty good chase behind him, Lipovic kept increasing his lead. So, 2 stage wins and the general classification for the German, who's clearly in great shape heading into the Tour de France, which is fantastic to see. Now, those were his first wins in 2 years, incidentally, and somewhat surprisingly. It was actually a fantastic week for the whole Red Bull team there. Pellizzari finished 2nd on GC. Pithy was runner-up to his teammate on the final day, having already won 2 stages earlier in the race, 1 and 3, and comfortably took the points jersey, of course. So the only stage not won by Red Bull was on day 2. There, Dusan Rajovic was quicker to the line than Pithy, taking a really big win for Solution Tech Nippo Rally. Bahrain's local man Jakob Ormzel took 3rd on GC, whilst Kaka Rural had 3 rides in the top 7, with Berwick, Fernandez and Nicolau coming 5th, 6th and 7th respectively. Not everybody is going to look back on the race fondly though, because there was a huge crash on stage 2 that saw the race neutralised for half an hour. And unfortunately, there were some serious consequences. Eduard Prales and Lucas Towers both fractured bones in their legs, the tibia and lower leg respectively. We wish them both a very speedy recovery. Prales, in fact, was supposed to be racing the Tour de France for the first time this year at the age of 38, so I'm absolutely gutted for him. Tom Pidcock took a win on what are essentially home roads in Andorra at the Morabank Clásica at the weekend. Only 125Ks, but with barely a metre of flat, it was a really tough race with a summit finish. Julien Bernard was off the front going into that final climb for Lidl Trek, but Chris Harper was on a mission yesterday. He rode on the front for what seemed like an eternity and then still had enough energy to jump across to an attack by Sepp Kuss of Visma Lisabike. Along with Verona Tulit and Pidcock himself, they were clearly the best 5 climbers in the race, save perhaps for Derek G, who had an untimely puncture. In the end, it came down to a sprint between Pidcock and Verona, with the Brit winning by a few lengths. Now, that was his 4th win on the road this season, which is pretty solid when you consider he was out for a few weks with injury. At the Route d'Occitanie in France, there was a bit of a masterclass from Visma's Davide Piganzoli. You might remember he was a bit of a revelation at the Giro d'Italia, where he rode in support of Vingegaard whilst also picking up some big results himself. On stage 3 of Occitanie, he went on a solo raid, attacking with almost 40Ks to go and making everyone else look distinctly average. He crossed the line a minute 42 in front of Ebon Ruiz of Equipo Kern-Pharma, propelling him from 5th to 1st on the final GC. Now, those were his first 2 wins since he took a stage and the GC at the Tour of Antalya back in 2024. Cofidis took 3rd and 4th overall, with experience and youth actually, Jonne Zagiri in 3rd and 22-year-old Jamie Meehan from Ireland in 4th. Paola Blasi continued with her stellar season by taking another dominant win at the Volta Ciclista a Catalunya Femenina. She won the Queen stage to La Molina by a minute 20 over young Celia Giri of FDJ. Now, she won 4 races, Blasi, last year, even though she only turned pro in May, but she's already won 6 times so far this year, including Amstel Gold, and now 3 general classifications, including La Vuelta. She's down to race the Tour de France Femme avec Zwift in August, and although she's had a busy year already, with 6 weeks until the start, I think she's going to be right up there with the best. Not a bold prediction, perhaps, but it's going to be very interesting to see how she fares against the likes of Vollering and Ferrand-Prévot on the mountainous stages there. The race also marked the first win of the season for Marianne Vos of Visma Lisabike, who won the 3rd and final stage ahead of her teammate Nienke Veenhoven. The role has actually been reversed there from the opening stage. Second on GC went to Jerry, with Canada's Sydney Spirenga in third place overall. Quinn Simmons of Lidl Trek retained his US national title yesterday in Charleston. He attacked with 29Ks to go and finished 2 minutes in front of Kevin Vermaaker and Larry Warbass. So we will see the stars and stripes on display at the Tour de France again this year, all being well. Kate Courtney, better known for her mountain biking, won the women's road race. She's had some big results actually on the road this year and doesn't look to be concentrating on that a little bit more at this point in her career. Artem Schmidt beat Warbass by 10 seconds in the individual time trial, whilst Taylor Nibb won the women's by 45 seconds. And finally, Lorenzo Finn of Red Bull was dominant at the Giro Next Gen last week. He won the mountaintop finish on stage 6 by almost a minute, and also won the 22k individual time trial on the final day of the race, underlining his credentials as a future stage racing great. UAE's Ecuadorian rider Mateo Ramirez took second, whilst it was another South American in third, the Brazilian Henrique Bravo of Soudal Quickstep. In other news, Romain Bardet has taken on a senior management role at his former team, now named Decathlon CMA CGM. His official role is sports manager, a position that he'll take up on the 1st of January 2027. As part of his job, he'll be a personal mentor to Paul Seixas, apparently, and I think he's going to do a great job at that. Bardet knows what it's like to have the pressure of being a young French hope, so he'll know what he's going through right now. Now, unfortunately, I'm going to finish this week's Racing News Show with the tragic news that 16-year-old Shane O'Brien lost his life last week at home in Ireland. He hit a parked lorry whilst out training near Ballygalleen last Tuesday. O'Brien was a very promising first-year junior, just 16 as I said, and racing for the Net Company INEOS development team. We send our sincere condolences to everybody who knew him, and our thoughts are especially with his older brother Liam, who himself was racing at the Giro Next Gen when this tragedy happened. We're thinking of you, Liam. Rest in peace, Shane.